You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
We are just about a week or so away from spring training 2017. I cannot believe I'm saying those words. You may not believe that you're hearing them. It is Matt Wehmeyer joined by Jen Langosch for the Cardinals podcast once again. And Jen, let's kind of dive right in as we break down what this Cardinals team can look like in terms of a 25-man or expanding it to a 40-man roster at the onset of the 2017 spring training. So, Jen, let's run down about six or seven topics, beginning with this one. When you look at the guys that comprise the current roster, who would you say is not necessarily the best player or the most talented, but perhaps the guy who is going to be the biggest difference maker for the Cardinals in 2017?
Yeah, I think for this, I go back to December and the Cardinals signing of Dexter Fowler. And I think, you know, as you revisit what the Cardinals' goals were heading into the offseason, they were to inject athleticism onto this roster, to improve defensively, and to become a better base running team. All three of those things are improved by having Dexter Fowler on your roster. He makes your outfield better in that he can be an average, you know, defensive center fielder himself, but he allows Randall Grichuk to move to left field, where the Cardinals, for the first time in many years, now profile above average defensively. He changes the look of your lineup. He gives you athleticism there in the leadoff spot. He's a base runner, probably going to be immediately the best base runner on this team in terms of not just being able to steal bases, but being able to take the extra bases, being able to be smart on the base path. So when you look at really where the Cardinals were deficient last year and where things fell short, seeing Dexter Fowler in every way makes them better. And then you add on top of that, injecting his personality into a clubhouse that, quite frankly, at times last year felt kind of stale. He's going to bring a levity to it. He's going to bring some credentials, having just been on a team that won the World Series. And I think, you know, the 5 years, 80-plus million that the Cardinals invested in him, they hope to see him be that difference maker right away.
Yeah, to take him away, like you said, from the reigning world champions and the arch nemesis of this franchise is going to really spice up that rivalry as if it needed it. So these 19 meetings in the regular season are really going to be must-see events, thanks in large part to Dexter Fowler. Jen, topic number two, I think, a guy last year that caught everybody off guard in making the opening day roster was certainly Jeremy Hazelbaker. Who could be this year's Hazelbaker, if you will? Who's a guy that might surprise and find his way onto that 25-man roster?
Yeah, I'm going to take this question in a little different direction, because for the Cardinals, the way their roster is comprised heading into spring training, I think we have a pretty good idea of who's going to be on, and I'm not sure that we're going to see the big surprise. But for me, I think who could surprise in spring in terms of where he ends up and the role he takes is Trevor Rosenthal. And this is a guy who we haven't talked a lot about recently just because of what he's gone through the last year. I mean, last year, of course, entered the season again as the Cardinals closer, finished the season not only out of the closer's job, but having missed a couple months due to an arm injury. And there's really a lot of questions about where he's going to fit moving forward. And what the Cardinals have decided to do with Trevor this year is to stretch him out in spring training for the first time in his career. Not necessarily with the idea that he's going to win a rotation spot, since the Cardinals have a plethora of starting pitchers already, but they want that flexibility. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how Trevor navigates through spring, how he does when he stretches out and pitches multiple innings. And then he might end up surprising some folks in terms of where he fits in the bullpen, whether it be as a setup guy or maybe a multiple innings reliever that can bridge the game to the back end. So I look at him as a very intriguing guy to watch in spring training. And again, he hasn't been talked about a lot recently because of what happened in 2016, but I think he can reopen some eyes if he's healthy and pitching like he was a couple years ago.
Yeah, great choice there. He is certainly going to be a huge X factor for the Cardinals in 2017, no question. Jen, topic number three, every team, despite their record, has a star player, or if not, a star player, a guy that is identified as the face of the team, the face of the franchise. So a lot of talent on this Cardinals roster, but right now, if you have to pick one guy who is that quote-unquote star or the face of the team, who is that guy, and what is his status right now in terms of, is he a young guy entering his prime? Is he a guy on the other side of his prime? Is he a guy battling health issues? How would you assess the star player or the face of the franchise for the Cardinals right now?
Yeah, I think going into this next year, the star is still Yadier Molina. I mean, this is a guy who has been on the field for the Cardinals since 2004, which is longer than anybody else on the roster. And, 1B behind him would probably be his battery mate, Adam Wainwright. But you look at what Yadi has meant on the offensive side, but even more so on the defensive side, and in his way that he has of helping navigate young pitchers early in their career. He is very much an anchor of this organization. And, he's heading into his age 34 season. So I think there's a lot of questions about whether the durability that he's shown will be able to continue. But he's coming off a year in which he had a sensational second half of the season. And he had that great second half while playing more games than ever before in his career. It was interesting a couple weeks ago, Mike Matheny saying that the Cardinals, that he does not anticipate pulling back on that workload for Yadi Molina. I think this is going to be something that we have to keep an eye on through the season. But as of right now, all signs are a go for Yadi. He's going to participate in the World Baseball Classic. He's going to be behind the plate on opening day. And really, it wouldn't surprise me if once again, at the end of the year, we're talking about Yadi Molina catching 100, starting 130 plus games behind the plate.
Yeah, if anybody can do it, it is certainly Yadier Molina. Never count that guy out. He can still be a huge impact player for the Cardinals here in the 2017 season. Jen, the next topic, in terms of the vision for this Cardinals team and for the Cardinals front office in particular, how is the team kind of balancing, immediate goals with regards to the upcoming season, with regards to the big picture plan? I know it's a tricky balancing act for any team and any sport, really. So in terms of that, what is really the vision of the Cardinals front office?
Yeah, I mean, the vision is to get back to playing in October, certainly. And I think more from a micro sense, the Cardinals were very fundamentally flawed in 2016. As they go into 2017, they're looking to improve in the field, improve on the bases, and do so with a more athletic team. And what we saw that manifest itself in the moves that they made this offseason. I mean, most notably going and signing Dexter Fowler, but also recommitting to some of their other players, Colton Wong, somebody that they think can really shore up the defense in the infield, recommitting to Randall Grichuk after an up-and-down season last year, believing that he can be an above average defender in left field. So, as we come into get ready for spring training, this is an organization that is really going to kind of revisit those fundamentals this spring so that they can shore up the issues that they had last year and become more sound. What we're used to seeing from the Cardinals historically is that this has been a very fundamentally sound team. For whatever reason, that got away from them last year. But their belief is that they have the talent to be very competitive again in the NL Central and make a run in the postseason if they can just fix some things internally.
Yeah, they want to get back to the Cardinal way, certainly, and get back to playing the way that we're accustomed to seeing the Cardinals play baseball here in 2017 and beyond, of course. Jen, for the next one, I'm using air quotes as I say the perfect season. Now, the perfect season as a term can be different for any team. It could be something in terms of the White Sox, for instance. They're clearly rebuilding. Teams like the Cubs and the Dodgers and the Indians are clearly teams that are going for it in 2017, and nothing short of a world title is going to satisfy them. So within that spectrum between rebuilding and contending for a championship, where do the Cardinals fall right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you were to ask the Cardinals, certainly they go into the season believing that they could be playing for a world championship by the end of October. But as I pull back from that just a little bit, I really think the perfect season for the Cardinals would be grabbing the NL Central title back from the Cubs. I mean, here they are once again going into the season expecting, with everybody expecting that the Cubs are going to repeat as division champs and maybe as World Series champions. So the Cardinals, I mean, it's quite a gap to make up in 1 year, having finished 17 and a half games back of Chicago last year. But they believe that, with Chicago has as much youth on their side, the Cardinals believe that they have similar youth on their side. And I think if they can get back to the top of the NL Central, the season in many ways will be defined as successful.
And Jen, as we come down the home stretch here, as we look at the projected 25-man roster for this Cardinals team, within that roster, what is the biggest uncertainty right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's really not a lot of roster spots up for grabs with the way the Cardinals have built their 40-man roster this winter. I think the one spot that will be a true competition is probably for the final bullpen spot. You look at a bullpen right now that's likely to feature Rosenthal, Sonwano, Kevin Segrist, Matt Bowman, Jonathan Broxton, and Brett Cecil. And there's one more spot there to take. So keeping your eye on a guy like a Sam Tuivalala, Miguel Sokolovich, who's contributed at the major league level the last couple years and is out of options this year. Those are guys who I think could push their way into competition for that seventh spot. On a lesser, non-roster decision making, there are some interesting position battles, whether it be third base, does that belong to Jed Jerko or Johnny Peralta by the end of camp? how does the rotation fill out? But I do think that bullpen is one where there could be a very open competition for that final and 25th roster spot.
And Jen, to wrap things up here, you know, when you look at other sports, you never hear, you know, these happy romantic stories about, you know, NFL training camp or about the first practices for, you know, the NBA or the NHL, but baseball and spring training is always different. And in your opinion, why is that? Why is there so much more elation and optimism and just pure joy when it comes to the start of baseball season as opposed to the other three big sports?
Yeah, I wonder if it's just that so many of us have spent the last couple months in places where it's cold and it's snowing and it's icing and you're dressed in winter coats. And then all of a sudden you show up in Florida, you know, as is the case for the Cardinals, and there's the sunshine, the temperatures are in the 70s and 80s, and the weather is just perfect. And it's a sign, I mean, for all of us, that spring and summer is around the corner. And I mean, you're right, especially here in St. Louis. Baseball season never truly ends here in St. Louis. It's just talked about for 12 months a year, but there is always at this time of year, great anticipation, great excitement. And there's also this idea that, you know, the day one of spring training, every team is still in contention and there's hope and there's optimism no matter what your team roster looks like. So I look forward to getting down there in just over a week and getting started with the coverage there. And I know players that I've talked to, many have already left for Florida to get a head start, but everybody's looking forward to coming together once again and working towards some greater goals than they achieved in 2016.
And I look forward to being very envious of you when you do arrive in Florida, because I'm still going to be stuck here in the Northeast in the cold and the chill and the gray skies. But for you, I'm quite happy. And Jen Langosch, this has been a pleasure as always. Enjoy your time in Florida, and we will do it again soon. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, St. Louis Cardinals. We're talking Pirates baseball once again with Adam Berry, our Pirates reporter. And Adam, hard to believe, but we are about a week or so away from the opening of spring training 2017. It seems like the World Series ended, I don't know, last week, but another offseason has flown right by, and the 2017 season is right around the corner. So, Adam, for this feature today, we're going to kind of dive right in and look at the roster and the players on this roster and guys that have certain roles or potential roles within this team as the team breaks for a spring training, like I said, about a week or so from today. So we're going to run down about six or seven topics, Adam, and beginning with this one. When you look at the current 25-man roster or expand it even to the 40-man roster, who do you feel right now on this Pirates team is the biggest difference maker?
Yeah, I think actually probably, you know, if you're comparing this team to where they were a year ago, I think Jameson Taillon might actually be the biggest difference maker in terms of taking over that number two spot. He's essentially replacing Francisco Liriano there. I think that is a pretty big upgrade potentially for the Pirates. But overall, I think it's kind of along those lines. They just have a little bit of higher upside in the rotation in general. You know, you're looking at Gerrit Cole, Jameson Taillon, Ivan Nova, Chad Kuhl most likely, and then, you know, a young guy to kind of round out the group. And compared to where they were last year with Cole, Liriano, Jonathan Neese, Jeff Locke, and Juan Nicasio, there's just a little bit more to be hopeful about heading into this season with the rotation. Granted, there's also, you know, a lot of things that would have to go right for them, but I think that's the case with a lot of small market teams. But just generally speaking, they have a better top three once you add Taillon and Nova in there, and there's just more upside really throughout the rotation, and also more depth when you look at guys like Stephen Brault, Trevor Williams, Nick Kingham later this summer, and as guys who might not even make the opening day rotation. So a little bit of a better feeling around the rotation heading into this spring, I think.
And Adam, one name you threw in there was Juan Nicasio, and for my money, going back to a year ago, he was the biggest surprise, a guy that cracked the starting rotation. It didn't last, of course, but he had such a phenomenal spring. The Pirates really didn't have a choice, and he was part of the rotation come opening day 2016. So fast forwarding to opening day 2017, when you look at, again, the 25-man roster, who is one guy that could be this year's Juan Nicasio, a guy that could really surprise and find their way onto that roster?
Yeah, that one's a lot harder to predict, because I don't think any of us would have had Juan Nicasio as the big surprise guy, especially making the rotation heading into last spring. I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction and say that it's Tyler Glasnow, who is not somebody you would think is being a surprise, as highly ranked as he is in the prospect polls. I think he's number 9 overall for MLBpipeline.com, but there's a little bit of a post-hype thing for him going on in Pittsburgh right now. I think people were, you know, generally discouraged by the debut. You know, they expected more right off the bat, given all the hype. But this is a guy who a year ago, people were clamoring for him to be in the opening day rotation. You know, they wanted him basically every time a starter went down or somebody had a bad start, they called for Glasnow. And then he wasn't quite what they expected when he got called up. But, you know, he has said that last year was a personal disappointment for him, even with the crazy AAA numbers. You know, he just never felt quite right, especially once he got called up to the big leagues. He's identified some things mechanically. I think the Pirates are really going to hammer home that changeup with him this spring, probably try to get him to work in a two-seamer a little bit more. And I think that could really open up his game a little bit. So I think you could start to see maybe Glasnow's potential. Even if he doesn't make the opening day roster, he could be a guy that kind of catches some people's attention again this spring training.
Yeah, we know the talent is there. The raw stuff is certainly there. He needs to put it all together and have the kind of 2017 season that, like you alluded to, people are expecting of him. Adam, topic number three, when you look at every team has at least one star player or one, you know, face of the franchise, and I think it's pretty obvious who that guy still is for this Pirates team. But to expand on that, you know, there are some stars that are entering their prime, others that might be on the other side of their prime, other guys that may be battling back from injuries. So who would you say is still, you know, the star player for this Pirates team, and what is his status as that star player?
Yeah, it's still Andrew McCutchen. He made it through the offseason. He's still a Pittsburgh Pirate. You know, we talked to him about, you know, last year and how disappointing it was personally, you know, offensively and defensively. He just never quite seemed like himself. He was a little bit better down the stretch, but in general, you know, he has said that he is hungry heading into this year. You know, he said motivated wasn't even quite the right word to describe the way that he's feeling right now. I think it's just a big year in general for him. I mean, you could be talking about him getting moved out of center field at some point this year. You know, this may be his last year in Pittsburgh, although, you know, a lot of people thought a couple months ago that he was practically done as a Pirate. So there's really just a lot at stake for him personally and as it relates to the team, because if the Pirates aren't contending come, you know, the trade deadline, do they have to more seriously consider moving him, just given his contractual status? So he's really just going to be the focal point of everything from the first day of spring training until the moment he's no longer in a Pirates uniform. But he is still undoubtedly the star. He can carry their lineup. You know, he is the heart of the clubhouse and everything like that. So yet another big year coming up for Andrew McCutchen.
Yeah, all eyes on Cutch, and that's something that he's certainly accustomed to, you know, as the MVP just a couple of years ago, face of the franchise, but certainly a make-or-break season for number 22, Andrew McCutchen, here in 2017. Topic number five, Adam, as we come down the stretch here, you know, the vision for this Pirates team and for the Pirates front office. You know, you have your teams that are clearly all in to win a title this season. You're talking about, you know, the Cubs and the Indians and the Red Sox and Dodgers of the world. You have your teams that are clearly rebuilding, talking about there, say, the, you know, the Pirates and not the Pirates, the Padres, excuse me there, Padres, the other P team, and the White Sox too, obviously. But where do the Pirates fall within that spectrum in terms of a vision for the 2017 season?
Yeah, I think the Pirates' dream is actually to throw that whole, if you will, the window concept out the window. You know, they don't believe that you have to be all in or rebuilding. Their goal is to be a sustainable winning team, you know, for as long as they can. And because, you know, it's tough to be a rebuilding team in a smaller market, you know, as far as the financial resources where you're competing against bigger markets like the Cubs or the Giants or the Dodgers. So their goal is, you know, try to get back to the postseason this year. Neil Huntington's thing is always play meaningful baseball in September and playoff baseball in October as often as possible. Because if they can contend on a yearly basis and just get in the dance, you know, you have as good of a chance as anyone, basically. So they think that they have a pretty well-stocked farm system that should keep providing, you know, major league caliber players, the core of their franchise. They have a pretty, you know, decent group of young players right now, as far as Starling Marte, Gregory Polanco, Josh Bell, Jameson Taillon, even Gerrit Cole, even though we're starting to consider him the veteran of the rotation. So they think they have a young core, and they can keep adding to it, and just sort of keep pushing that line forward to the point where they don't ever have to worry about a cycle of contending or rebuilding.
Every team has a different idea of what their quote-unquote perfect season would be. So what would that ideal perfect season be for the Pirates this year?
I asked Neil Huntington the other day what his perfect season would be for the Pirates in 2017, exempting the idea of them going 162-0. And he set the bar high by saying it would be winning a World Series. You know, but the most important factor in that is simply getting into the postseason. So, you know, to get there, the Pirates would have to be healthy. You know, the people who struggled last year would have to bounce back, namely Andrew McCutchen and Gerrit Cole. But health is really the most important factor in the continued development of their young players toward getting them back into the postseason with a shot at the World Series.
Yeah, excellent point there. And topic number six, Adam, when projecting the 25-man roster for this Pirates team in 2017, what is currently the biggest uncertainty amongst that 25?
I think the biggest roster competition is going to be the fifth starter job. The top candidates you're looking at are Drew Hutchison, Tyler Glasnow, Stephen Brault, Trevor Williams, a couple other guys in there that could surprise, but most likely that's what you're looking at. Glasnow obviously has the highest ceiling of the group. Brault had kind of an up-and-down debut last season. Trevor Williams, we haven't seen a whole lot of him in the big leagues. And Drew Hutchison, the Pirates' lone return in the oft-debated Francisco Liriano trade, has the most major league experience of the group. And, you know, the Pirates have a lot of success and history with, you know, reviving pitchers' careers. So maybe Hutchison is going to be that guy. I think his experience certainly gives him a leg up heading into spring training, but I think the Pirates are really going to let that one play out. Unfortunately, it's a long spring training to let it do so.
Yeah, it certainly is. 100 things could change and then change again. And Adam, to wrap things up here, you never hear, you know, happy feel-good stories about, you know, NFL training camp or the first practices for the NHL or the NBA, but it's always different for spring training for Major League Baseball. Why is that? Why does spring training put smiles on everybody's faces, and why is it just different from other sports?
Yeah, I think a lot of it just has to do with the time of year and where we spring train in general. You know, for those of us up north, it's not something I was used to before. We're heading from snow and cold and gray skies to the, you know, that beautiful blue sky and sand and beaches and green grass in Florida. You know, the first day of spring training, I've always said, feels like the first day of school, you know, where you come together after the summer, you know, you catch up with old friends, everybody's happy to see each other. Everything is pretty low stress, you know, especially when you're farther away from opening day. So it's just really, you know, it's a good time. It's low key. The weather is great. The work days are a little bit more normal compared to your usual baseball schedule. You know, you show up early and you leave early as opposed to showing up late in the afternoon and leaving late at night. So spring training is really just a wonderful time for all involved. I think that's what makes it so special.
Yeah, not a whole lot of bad in that equation when it comes to spring training. That is certainly a true statement there and a good way to wrap this one up. Our thanks to our Pirates reporter, Adam Berry. Adam will do it again soon, I'm sure. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Pittsburgh Pirates. It is hard to believe, but another offseason is flying right by us, and spring training is just around the corner, about a week or so away. To talk about the crew and how they're going to look in spring training, we welcome in Adam McKelvey once again, our Brewers reporter. And Adam, what we're going to do today is kind of run down a list of six or seven topics about, you know, the status of the team and the status of certain players on this team. So I kind of like to start here. When you look at the current makeup of the 25-man roster, I don't want you to pick out the guy that you feel is the best player or the most talented player, but a guy that could perhaps be the biggest difference maker for the Brewers in 2017. Who do you think that guy would be right now?
Well, you know, Matt, I think of this in terms of a new player, a guy who's different from last year and has a chance to make an impact. To me, that's Eric Thames, who is a really interesting out-of-the-box signing of David Stearns, played the last three seasons in a Korean baseball organization and put up gigantic numbers, was a huge star. Now he comes back to Major League Baseball, really with a lot to prove and a lot on the line. The projection models like him a lot, the statistical models. They think he's going to be a productive contributor to that lineup. But, you know, we'll see. In Korea, as Thames himself has said, there's a lot of pitchers that can really locate a breaking ball. They can really pitch backwards, throw any pitch in any count. But here in Major League Baseball, he's going to see a lot more velocity than he did over there. And that is a big part of the game right now with all these young fireballing pitchers. He's going to have to handle that for the first time in his career. Will he be able to do it? You know, the Brewers took a gamble here on this, sort of, you know, a lot of video study, not a lot of in-person look at him before making this deal. But if it pans out, it could prove a really wise investment by David Stearns.
Yeah, it certainly could. There's a lot that he has to prove, as you said, coming back over from overseas. And there's the factor, too, that he's basically replacing a guy in Chris Carter, who hit 41 home runs last year to lead the NL, non-tendered by the team. So there's some pressure there to meet those expectations. And it'll be a very interesting season as Eric Thames makes his way back to the major leagues for his second stint as a big leaguer. Adam, topic number two in terms of a guy that might be a surprise. Now, this could mean a guy that could, you know, sneak their way onto the 25-man opening day roster that nobody sees coming right now, or a guy that has a solid place on that roster right now but could really break out and have an unexpected good year. So using either one of those criteria, who could that guy be for the Crew?
Well, I'll pick a guy who could surprise by making the club, and I'm going to go to their top prospect, Lewis Brinson. Now, I don't think he's going to make the opening day roster. I think he'll start the year at AAA. That's where he finished last season after being traded from Texas to Milwaukee in the Jonathan Lucroy deal. He was really good in Colorado Springs at the end of the season. He's in the top 20 prospects in all of Major League Baseball, according to MLBPipeline.com. Kind of a five-tool guy if he clicks in the big leagues. The problem right now is it's a crowded outfield picture for Milwaukee, and they are pretty set at their primary positions with Ryan Braun in left, Keon Broxton and Kirk Nieuwenhuis kind of sharing time again in center field, and Domingo Santana back and right after being injured for a lot of last season. So some things probably will have to happen in spring for Lewis Brinson to make the club. He'd have to perform, obviously. That's number one. But probably something would have to happen to some of these guys ahead of him on the depth chart. You know, say a Ryan Braun trade. Say another injury for a player that opens his spot. What Brinson has going for him is he's already touched AAA and looked pretty good there, and he can play all three positions. So he has that flexibility. I sort of, you know, have him in the back of my mind. Again, I don't think he's going to make the big league roster. If he did, it would qualify as a surprise.
Yeah, I agree. But nonetheless, a guy that easily made the MLBPipeline.com top 100 prospects list, and a guy that we're going to be seeing in Milwaukee, if not this season, then at some point in the very near future for sure. Adam, topic number three, this is kind of a two-parter. When you think about the Brewers, or other people think about the Brewers, who is the one guy that people label as the face of that franchise, the one true star player of that team? I think this is a pretty easy answer here. But then when you take that player, how do you assess him in terms of, you know, is he entering his prime? Is he on the other side of his prime? Are there health issues? Could he find himself elsewhere before the end of the season? So tackle that whole ball of wax for us there.
Well, it's obviously Scooter Gennett.
Yes, of course.
You know, Ryan Braun, who is the correct answer to this question, pointed out something kind of crazy that the guys were talking about over dinner when they were all together in Milwaukee last weekend. Scooter Gennett's their second-longest tenured position player.
That's amazing.
That shows you the unbelievable turnover that this club has experienced over the last couple of years, that Scooter Gennett is the old grizzled veteran. But it's Ryan Braun. He is the face of this franchise. He has climbed his way back from the suspension and all that went along with it to become a really productive player in the middle of that lineup, coming off his best season since 2012 when he was second in MVP voting behind Buster Posey. The year before that, of course, he won the MVP. He is back to being a force and an elite hitter in Major League Baseball. Now, the second part of your question is where the questions come in. How much longer will he be that player? He's 33 years old. He last season navigated an entire year coming off back surgery. Him and Craig Counsell had a really good plan for how to get through that, including days off here and there. They executed it, and it was a big success. That remains something to keep an eye on. He also has that thumb issue that you'll remember from the past couple of years. They navigated that last season with no flare-ups, no times out of the lineup because of that. But that, again, is something to keep an eye on. It does not look like the Brewers will trade Ryan Braun this winter. We've talked a lot about that, about how he was nearly traded with Dodgers last season. Could that be revived over the winter? I mean, I think we're at the point now where they've got him penciled into the number three spot, and it doesn't look like he's going anywhere. And Mark Attanasio, their owner, in fact, at that fan fest, he kind of raised an idea that I'd heard floated before but never said out loud by anyone with the stature of the owner of the club, that perhaps when that Dodgers deal didn't happen, that was their shot. And now Ryan Braun won't be traded. So how much longer will he be a productive force in the middle of that lineup? That's going to determine, number one, how long he can hold down that three hole, and number two, whether there will come a time again where the Brewers have an opportunity to trade him. I think they'd like at some point to flip him for prospects. That's what they've done with so much of their other established big league talent. But in this particular case, for a number of different reasons, that's no sure thing. And it may just come down to him continuing to play for this Brewers team, and then they hope he can continue to do it deep into his 30s.
Yeah, as always, a litany of X factors when it comes to Ryan Braun. But for now, as you said, he is the number three hitter in this lineup. He is in a Brewers uniform, and until something changes, that's who he is and where he is. So we'll see what happens over the course of a very topsy-turvy 2017 season. Adam, the next topic, in terms of the vision of David Stearns and the front office in terms of, you know, short-term goals for the 2017 season, balancing with the long-term goals and the big picture for the franchise, you know, what is that balancing act? What is the blueprint right now for this front office?
Well, I'll tell you what, it is really interesting right now. The most interesting thing to me at the Brewers' day-long fan fest on Sunday was something Mark Attanasio, their owner, said, that for the first time ever, wins and losses are not the most important thing to him. He has finally gotten to the stage of kind of acceptance of this rebuild. It goes against his competitive nature. It is a really tough thing for him to do. He's the one who had to ultimately approve them going in this direction, and now he's bought in. He said of their top three, meaning Mark Attanasio, Stearns, and Craig Counsell, Attanasio himself is the one least concerned about wins right now. So he's looking at the long term. That means acquire, develop, retain. We've heard David Stearns say that so many times since he took over as GM. He is trying to stockpile talent. He's stockpiled a lot of up-the-middle talent. If you think about David Stearns' vision and the specifics of it, it is about acquiring talented players who are versatile in terms of their position. Shortstops, center fielders, to some degree he's tried to get some catchers, but really it's those up-the-middle defensive players, shortstop, center fielders, that time and time again he has acquired. The thought is you get as many good players like that as you can. You can move them to a position when you have a need, or those are valuable players that can be flipped to fill a need elsewhere on the diamond when you get to that point. Now, I don't think anyone expects the Brewers to be contenders in 2017. I don't think the owner thinks that, or he wouldn't talk about how, you know, wins and losses are not the priority. They are still looking at trying to see which of the players that they've acquired are good enough to be there on the back end of this thing, whether that's 2018, 2019, 2020. Somewhere in that window, though, they're going to have to get to a point where they compete, and I think 2017 is going to be about identifying which of these guys are going to be part of that.
And, Adam, that's a very good segue into the next topic, which is the quote-unquote perfect season. Now, that means very different things for very different clubs. If you're talking about the Cubs and the Indians and maybe the Dodgers and the Red Sox too, that could mean going all in to win a championship in 2017. If you're talking about teams like, say, the Padres or the White Sox or the Reds, that could mean accelerating the rebuild. And you've touched on this, obviously. I would think that the Brewers are closer to the rebuild end of the spectrum than the contending end. I think that's fairly obvious. But even though you just said that the owner's not concerned with a wins and losses total necessarily, if you had to put a number on things in terms of, you know, we want to reach this to have some tangible evidence that we are progressing, what would a quote-unquote perfect season be for this Brewers team?
Well, I'll give you a number, but it's not a win total. It's the number three. I think if they could get three players to sort of break out as established big leaguers, that's a perfect season for this Brewers team. And I'm thinking back to last season when they were better than expected, especially late in the year, they were really competitive. I think the Brewers had at least three quote-unquote breakout players last year. Jonathan Villar was definitely one of them, a guy who had kind of been a bench player for the Astros, established himself as a shortstop, and then he moved off that position when they brought up Orlando Arcia. But a guy who really established himself as a big leaguer. And on the pitching side, I think you can point to Zach Davies and even Junior Guerra. He's a special case, 31 years old. But Davies is a guy 23 years old, acquired in a trade, who established himself last season as a bona fide member of this rotation. And then Keon Broxton in center field, and you can point to a couple of others. Now, if they can get that same type of breakout from a group of players this season, that would bode really well for them moving forward. And there are lots of candidates. The one who comes to my mind first is Domingo Santana, who I sort of had circled last year as a guy who could be that, but injuries really hurt him. He had some arm injuries, missed a lot of the year, and never really got his feet underneath him in the big leagues. But he's one of those StatCast guys that you look at, and he's among the leaders. He led the team, and he's up there in Major League Baseball in small sample in terms of exit velocity. He just squares up a lot of baseballs. And you get the feeling that if he could rack up 500, 600 at-bats, that could translate into a lot of good things for this Brewers team. So he's a guy I have kind of circled for a breakout. But there are other opportunities. I mean, Orlando Arcia, their top prospect going into last year, he will get his first full season at shortstop. A lot of questions about him with the bat, and is he going to, you know, can he break through as an offensive player? That would be a really big deal for the Brewers. Catcher is a position that at the moment offers great opportunity. They have three players right now, Andrew Susak, Manny Pena, and Jet Bandy, all acquired recently, two of those, Susak and Bandy, via trades, that have an opportunity to grab that position with Jonathan Lucroy gone. They're youngish players with an opportunity to break out. And there are others around the diamond. The other guy just that comes to my mind right away is Travis Shaw, their third baseman. Kind of almost got there in Boston, but not quite. And now he gets an opportunity to play the position they hope every day at Miller Park, a good place to hit for a left-handed hitter. He could also be a breakout. So if they get two or three guys like that, I think that's a good season for this Brewers team. And then, you know, 2018, if you add up those 2 years of development, maybe 2018 is the year where you start to look a little more closely at wins and losses.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good way, interesting way to look at it in terms of what an ideal season would be, to have two or three guys really break out a la Jonathan Villar this past season. Then, you know, all systems go for the Brewers in 2018 and beyond. That certainly seems to be the blueprint there. Adam, coming down the home stretch, when you look at the 25-man roster as it projects right now, what do you feel is the biggest uncertainty within that 25-man group?
I think it's on the pitching side, Matt. I mean, right now they have too many starting pitchers and a lot of question marks in the bullpen. So if they get to spring training, I asked this of Craig Counsell, what happens if you get to the end of spring training and these guys, these starting pitchers are all healthy? Would you look at doing something creative in your starting rotation? And he said the answer is yes. He thinks teams are looking more creatively at how they deploy pitching. And whether that's a six-man rotation, whether that's some kind of a moving back and forth, I don't know what the answer would be. But it's something they're going to keep open-minded about if they're fortunate enough to get to the end of camp in that position. And then in the bullpen, I think there's opening. So will some of those starters go to the bullpen? That certainly is a possibility. But they've got Neftali Feliz, whom they signed, who has closing experience. The list of guys with saves, any significant number of saves, begins and ends right there. And then you've got, you know, some younger players who they like, Corey Knebel, Jacob Barnes, who are going to have to step up to fill the losses that were created when David Stearns traded the likes of Jeffress and Will Smith and Tyler Thornburg, guys who were really stalwarts in a good bullpen last season. So I think there's opportunity in the bullpen. There's a lot of question marks that they're going to have to sort out in spring training. And just generally, if we're generalizing, to me, the pitching side has a lot more to be settled in spring training than the offensive side.
And, Adam, as we wrap things up here, you know, look, we all love our football and our basketball and our hockey, but you never hear these, you know, these romantic feel-good stories about, you know, oh, NFL training camp or the first practice on the rink for hockey or, you know, on the courts for basketball. Not to say they're not exciting in and of themselves, but it's always so much different with baseball and with spring training. There's just a different feel, a different attitude, and more attention towards spring training than the practices, the opening practices for any other sport. Why do you think that is?
I think it's, number one, a matter of seasonality. Everybody, at least up in our parts, are just tired of the cold, tired of the snow that we haven't had nearly enough this year, if you ask me. But the fact that it's spring, it's 80 degrees in Phoenix when you get there, you see the green grass, you hear the crack of the bat. There's nostalgic and comforting about the fact that spring and summer are going to come here to the frozen tundra as well at some point. I think that has a lot to do with it. There also is just something in baseball about the uncertainty of it all. I think in baseball, teams go to spring training, you know, with hope and faith. That's the thing Bud Selig always used to point to. And in baseball, it's easier to have that, I think, for a greater number of clubs, a greater percentage of clubs, than in the other sports, because there is so much variability that happens throughout the course of a baseball season that you really don't know what your club is going to do. I remember sitting here with you last year, and I brought up the prospect of 100 losses for the Brewers. But they certainly did not have a 100-loss season. They were better than expected last year. No, I don't think they're going to win the World Series this year, but they have a chance to be better than expected again this year. And that hope, I think, permeates baseball a little bit more than the other sports for whatever reason. So it's a good time. It's a really good thing to go visit there. That's my pitch for people to dig into their pocketbooks a little bit. Easy for me to say, I guess, and my expenses are paid. But it is a really worthwhile trip to get down there, soak up some vitamin D. And the sounds of the game feel really good when it's cold up in Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the next person that says I went to spring training and had a terrible time is going to be the first one, because you just never hear those stories. It's always magical, you know, for families and fans and you know, kids of all ages, as the saying goes, and something again to look forward to here in 2017 as spring training is just around the corner yet again. Adam McKelvey, a great place to wrap this one up. Our thanks to you, and we'll do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Milwaukee Brewers. Talking Reds baseball today once again with our Reds reporter, Mark Sheldon. And Mark, thank you so much for the time, and it's hard to believe, hard to say, hard to hear, but spring training just around the corner. That is really incredible. Another offseason has just flown right by as we are just about ready to open the gates at various spring training facilities all across the country. And the Reds, of course, one of 30 teams readying for the 2017 season. So, Mark, with that in mind, we're going to kind of run down six or seven topics about, you know, the status of the team itself, the status about certain players. And with that in mind, let's start here. Let's talk about a guy that, in your eyes right now, could be the biggest difference maker for the Reds. Not necessarily the best player or the most talented, but who's the guy that could have the biggest impact in terms of really making a difference for this team from one year to the next?
I'm going to pick a collection of guys and just say the pitching staff in general. They, going into this year, they didn't make any sexy acquisitions. It's Drew Storen and Scott Feldman, really. But what they've done is they've gotten their younger guys. They're going to have them compete. They have healthy arms, again, for them, knocking on wood. But guys like Anthony DeSclafani and Homer Bailey are expected to be back. And then it's just putting all that together. They're going to be able to set up the bullpen the way they want. They're going to be able to have a rotation. They feel have at least three or four guys that are known quantities that can work deep into games. And I think talking to Brian Price over the weekend during the Reds caravan, it just seems like they expect the 2017 pitching to be far better than the disaster that was 2016, especially in the beginning. That with all the injuries that really just killed them, they got off on the wrong foot, and they were an unmitigated disaster in the first 2 months of last season. So they feel like just that alone should make them the difference for them to get off on the right foot coming into this season.
Yeah, as tough as it was to endure in 2016, only one way to go from that, and that is up. And we'll see how far up the Reds can go with their pitching here in the 2017 season. Mark, topic number two, in terms of a guy that might surprise, this could mean either a guy that could sneak his way onto the opening day 25-man roster, or a guy that has a solid place on that roster but could surprise with a great unexpected season. Who could that player be for the Reds?
I think it could be, and it would be a surprise, it would be Amir Garrett, just because I think out of all the guys that are contending for that rotation spot, he kind of has the longer threshold to cross. Some of the other guys have already pitched in the major leagues, whether it's Cody Reed or Robert Stevenson or Tim Adelman. But Garrett has got a half a season of AAA, but he's also got exciting left-handed power stuff. He could really do a lot. And I think if he was able to leapfrog over all those guys and make the team, that would be a very interesting move for them. He's a guy that a lot of people are excited about, and I think he could be a big difference maker, you know, as a left-handed power pitcher for them if he comes up.
And Mark, kind of a two-part question here. I think that for every team in baseball, there was one guy who was the most identifiable as that team's star player or the guy that you really call the face of the franchise. So who would that star player be? And then the second part of the question would be, what is that star player's status? Whether it's, you know, is he entering his prime? Is he on the other side of his prime? Is he battling health issues? So, again, two-parter, who is that guy and what is his status?
It certainly has to be Joey Votto as the main man. The team is kind of built around him. And based on the numbers he has posted the last two seasons, I don't think he's out of his prime yet. He's been really had some historical second halves the last 2 years. Now the big key is going into this season is that can he get off to a good start? He got off to a dismal start. He was batting .213 as of June 1st of 2016, and he kind of had a middling first half of 2015 before he got it going. So I think the key for him is to come in, and even though he had a good spring last year, it didn't translate into the beginning of the season. The key for him is to come in and have a strong start to the season and also get better defensively. That's the biggest thing he wanted to work on, is to improve his all-around game. He wasn't very good on the bases. He wasn't very good with his glove last year. He's a former Gold Glover, so he wants to really be an all-around player that the team can really rely on, and he is their star, and he's obviously making the most money. He wants to set a good example and work hard and play in 162 games. I think he played in 158 last year, so he's their guy, and they're going to have to hope that he has another big production year that they can build around.
Yeah, no question there. If he can somehow find a way to work that second half magic into the first half, you're talking about a guy who would easily be in the MVP discussion, no question there. Topic number five, Mark, in terms of a vision for this team, as far as the front office goes, every team has the balancing act of, incorporating short-term goals for the current season with a big picture, a long-term picture. So how do the Reds accomplish that balancing act right now? What do you think that their vision is for 2017 and beyond?
I think it's to finally put the rebuild behind them and really not necessarily contend this season, but they want to see growth. They want to see players taking, like what Brian Price put it, is taking responsibility for themselves and going out there and doing, competing and being on the field. They want to take the team into August and still having, at least in theory, a chance. They don't want to be and also ran in a very, very tough division. And I think what they've been building on the pitching side and they've been building on the offensive side, it's a lot of mixture of youth and veterans, and they really want to see this kind of collection of players, especially the ones that are going to be around for the future, really take the next step forward.
And Mark, the next topic, when you say a quote-unquote perfect season for this Reds team, now obviously that term means different things for different teams. If you're talking Cubs and Indians and maybe Red Sox and Dodgers, they're all in to win a title in 2017. You've got teams like the Brewers and the White Sox and the Padres, for instance, that are clearly in a rebuild. Is that where the Reds fall? Where on that spectrum do you feel that the Reds are, and what would be for them, again, a perfect season?
I think until they show otherwise, they're still technically in that rebuild mode with teams like the Brewers. I think if you want to call it a perfect season for them, I think if they were as close to possible as 500, I think they would call that a perfect season. But not only that, as a team, I think individually they'd love really to see some certain guys that are going to be around for the next few years really move up. And you got to think about guys like Jose Peraza, that he gets established, they find a spot for him to play every day, even whether it's moving around or one position. If they can get Nelson Herrera involved at second base, if they can find a home for Brandon Phillips and then bring Herrera up and get him going. And then you see guys like Billy Hamilton having a good year as a leadoff hitter. He kind of had a good end of the season last year until he got hurt. Adam Duvall repeating what he did, Scott Schebler picking up where he left off, Eugenio Suarez, and so on and so on. I think that would be a perfect season for them, obviously, to stay healthy as well. But they really want to see these younger hitters and younger pitchers, some of the guys I've already mentioned previously, really take that next step and show that they're ready to be a big league contender maybe in 2018. But you got to kind of show that they're ready to take some steps forward in 2017.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a 500 mark at 81 up and 81 down would be cause for celebration in Cincy this year. And we'll see how close they get to that mark. And the next topic, Mark, as we come down the stretch here, when you project the 25-man roster for opening day for this Reds team, what right now is the biggest uncertainty, the biggest thing up in the air on that 25-man roster?
Definitely the fifth spot of the rotation. You look at it, like I mentioned, Amir Guerra is a possibility, but then you have Cody Reed, Robert Stevenson, Tim Adelman, Sal Romano. Scott Feldman is likely the fourth starter, but that's not a locked-in situation yet. So they really have a bunch of guys. And, of course, Bronson Arroyo could be signed soon and be in camp as well. So there's a lot of different guys that are going to be vying for that spot. Some of those guys that don't make the rotation, like a guy like possibly Romano, could end up in the bullpen. That's something they wouldn't rule out. Same for Reed and Stevenson. I think for Garrett, it's either starting in AAA or starting in the major leagues. But that's going to be an interesting battle. That's going to be the most intriguing battle of camp. And it's probably going to go all the way to the end. But that'll be the spot that a lot of people are going to be looking at. And it's most uncertain.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on for sure as the spring training of the season wears on here. So, Mark, to wrap things up here, you know, when you look at other sports, you never hear the, or read these, you know, romantic tales about, you know, the opening of training camp for the NFL or anything involving the NHL or even the NBA. But it's always different with baseball and with spring training. You know, why is that? Why does spring training always put everybody in a good mood and put a smile on everybody's faces where perhaps other sports don't succeed in that department?
It's a great question. I think just for myself, I enjoy going to spring training. It's a more relaxed atmosphere. Obviously, it's warm. Most of the cities that are in Major League Baseball are cold weather cities, and they've endured a long winter of waiting around and talking about baseball. And then you kind of see the fruits of the labor, so to speak, of what the clubs did to make their changes, the new faces, the old faces, the young prospects coming up. It all kind of comes together, and it's also a very relaxed opportunity in the clubhouse to interview guys. You can get access to them a little bit longer than you do during the regular season, and I just think you kind of put all that together, and for the fans, there's definitely a little more access to the players as far as seeing them and watching them work out. I just think you put it all together, it's just an enjoyable experience. It's a very long 6-7 weeks, but it's definitely worth it if you can able to come out to a camp and watch a team play and practice and play a game. It's fun.
Yeah, very well said. Mark Sheldon, our thanks to you as always. We'll do it again at this time next week for sure. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Cincinnati Reds. It is hard to believe, but spring training 2017 is right around the corner, just about a week or so away. And the defending champs ready to go back-to-back in 2017. We're joined right now by Cubs reporter Kerry Muscat. And, Kerry, we thank you as always for the time. What we're going to do today is just kind of run down some spring training superlatives, if you will, and kind of pinpoint one or two players that fit each criteria to see where the defending champions stand as they head into spring training to get ready for the 2017 season. So, Kerry, let's start here. Let's start with a guy that's in your opinion is going to be the biggest difference maker on the team. That's not to say the best player or the most talented, but the guy that could simply make the biggest difference for the Cubs here in 2017. Who would that player be for you?
I guess the way I looked at this was what will be different for the Cubs this year in terms of after last year. And really the biggest thing is they're going to be looking for a new leadoff man. Madden is projecting Kyle Schwarber as that guy. Filling Dexter Fowler's spot is going to be really hard. Fowler was their leader in terms of on-base percentage. He really set the tone. He set the mood in the clubhouse. So let's see who's batting first when opening day comes.
Yeah, that's going to be a major, major storyline all throughout spring training. Maybe Schwarber's the guy. Maybe they go in a different direction, but something to keep an eye on for sure as opening day 2017 approaches. Kerry, topic number two, in terms of a guy that might surprise. Now, this could mean a guy that could find his way unexpectedly onto the 25-man opening day roster or a guy that has a solid spot on that roster but could have a breakout season. So, with those two criteria in mind, who is one guy you would select for this?
Well, I am sort of leaning towards Albert Almora Jr. because he's going to be called. He's projected as starting in center field and sharing, kind of platooning in center with John Jay, who they acquired. The last year was a really crazy year for Albert. He got married. He was promoted to the big leagues for the first time. He welcomed his first child, and then he ends up scoring the tie-breaking run in Game 7 of the World Series. So it's kind of just a whirlwind for him. But he comes into camp now sort of knowing that he belongs a little more, and that's really going to help him. With Fowler, they're not expecting Almora to fill Fowler's spot at the number one spot in the lineup, but they are hoping to take advantage of his defensive work and have him take over in center field. And Jay is there to guide him and to mentor him.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting season for him. Like you said, a great year on and off the field, apparently, for Mr. Almora Jr., and he could play a very big role for the Cubs here in 2017. Kerry, topic number three, every team, regardless of their record or their status, you know, has that one, maybe more than one, star player or, you know, face of the franchise. So who would you identify as that particular star player or face of the franchise? And in terms of their status, is it a guy, you know, entering his prime, in his prime, on the other side of his prime? How would you kind of assess all that for the Cubs?
If you word it that way, as the face of the franchise, I would lean more towards Anthony Rizzo. But the player that I'm kind of focusing on to watch will be Chris Bryant. It'll be really fun to see what he can do next. He wins the Minor League Player of the Year. He's then next year he's named Rookie of the Year. Then the next year he's the MVP. So obviously there was no problem with any sophomore jinx for this guy. And what I like is that when we talked to Bryant in January at the Cubs convention, he's already done some research as to how pitchers were approaching him. And so he knows what he needs to do to change. So he's going to be, he felt that pitchers were pitching more inside and he pulled the ball more. And I looked up his numbers. He, of all the home runs that he hit last year, only hit one to right field. So I guess what he's feeling he needs to do is sort of hit the ball more to right. And that will be, it'll be interesting to see if he can do that to sort of counter what pitchers are going to do. Because obviously pitchers are going to make an adjustment to try and get this guy out.
Oh, no question. And like you said, he's had a first couple years in the majors that rivals, you know, any first couple in the history of baseball. You rattled off all the accomplishments and a world title to boot. And it's frightening to think that for everything he did accomplish last year, for as good as he already is, if he can tap into that opposite field power, look out. I mean, sky is the absolute limit for Chris Bryant in 2017, and we'll see what he does for an encore here. Kerry, next topic as we move right along. In terms of the vision of Theo Epstein and company in the front office in terms of, you know, accomplishing short-term goals for the current season and balancing that with the long-term big-picture objectives of the franchise, how would you assess that for the Cubs right now?
Well, I'm actually leaning more towards, I don't think Theo's vision has changed at all. They're still working on building that foundation for sustained success. That's their goal. What I like is Joe Maddon's approach heading into 2017, in that he's been worried and thinking about what his message is going to be to the team. You know, he doesn't want them to become lackadaisical, doesn't want them to be resting on their laurels. So his message, he's told us, is going to be that he wants the players to be uncomfortable. He doesn't want them to just sort of sit back and relax and everything's great. He's still expecting them to be working just as hard. And I'm sure that we'll be seeing more T-shirts. The man is kept his T-shirt company very busy. Things like embrace the target, do simple better, the process is fearless, be present, not perfect. You know, we went through all that. So I'm really anxious to see what he's going to come up with in 2017. Right now, it's be uncomfortable, and I think that's an interesting attitude to take.
Yeah, I think so, too, and I think that for any team in any sport that wins a championship, you have to achieve that balance of, you know, celebrating and, you know, patting yourself on the back because you've earned it, but there comes a point where you have to put that in the rearview mirror, focus on the task at hand, and that is the challenge that awaits the Cubs here in 2017. And, Kerry, in terms of the, you know, I'm using air quotes, the perfect season, that can mean 30 different things for 30 different teams. Obviously, you have teams that are rebuilding, teams that want to get back to 500. The Cubs, obviously, on the complete opposite end of that spectrum. So a perfect season, quote-unquote, for the Cubs would result in what?
Well, it'd be a repeat.
Sure.
That'd be pretty easy. it'd be kind of interesting because the last time they won the World Series in 1908 actually was they had won in 1907. So they were able to repeat in 1908. So we'll see if they can follow up on that. It'll be interesting. You know, it's going to come down to pitching and defense again. And I know people are going to say what because of their outrageous run differential. But really, they got off to such a good start. You know, 17-5 in April. But their pitching was just so good. Defense was so good. They're going to be a little better, well, a lot better at catcher with Wilson Contreras back there. You know, you've got Jason Hayward, Gold Glove winner. Rizzo was a Gold Glove winner. It's basic fundamental baseball. Let's play good fundamental baseball, and there's a chance they could do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. The defense is going to be there, and you mentioned Hayward. If he can get back to performing offensively the way we know he can, then look out there. He'll become even more of a threat, so we'll see what happens there. Kerry, as we come down the home stretch here, when you look at the 25-man roster as it stands right now, what do you think is the biggest uncertainty on that roster, again, as it stands right here in the beginning of February?
Well, one of the things that the Cubs have talked about is how they want to have a carry 13 pitchers. And if they decide to go with that many, which I believe they did for the majority of last season, for all of last season, it's going to come down to the, you know, who makes it into the bullpen. with the versatility of their guys, like a Ben Zobrist and Javi Baez, being able to move around, getting put, you know, they have so many versatile pieces in the position players. It's not that hard for them in terms of carrying, you know, do they carry the extra infielder, extra outfielder? You know, it's going to, that might be a little easier to figure out. But the bullpen's going to be really interesting because they've got some new faces in Koji Uehara. They added Caleb Smith, who's a Rule 5 pick. And it's just how these all, you know, Mike Montgomery was projected to start, but now they added Brett Anderson, who's projected for the rotation. So how do all these pieces fit together? That's kind of the fun part of spring training.
Yeah, no question. We know that Joe Maddon loves his versatility, and he's got that in spades with this current roster for the Cubs. We'll see how it all pieces together and what kind of a team they trot out there on opening day come early April. And, Kerry, just to wrap up here, I know people in Chicago, you know, they love their Bears and their Bulls and their Blackhawks, you know, as they should. But you never see people get, you know, romantic or whimsical about, you know, the opening of NFL training camp or about, you know, the first practices for basketball or hockey. Baseball's always different. Spring training is always different. You know, why is that in your eyes? You know, why is there a different attitude and a different feel about spring training as compared to other sports?
I guess it's just because winters are so horrible in Chicago. Maybe that has something to do with it. But I know I look forward to it, but I look forward to it for a different reason. I like watching the minor leaguers. I like seeing how the kids have developed from year to year. And what I think a lot of Cubs fans are looking forward to is, you know, let's see how Addison Russell is a year later. Let's see how Javi Baez is a year later. You know, let's see how these young kids. It's fun. They're so attached to this roster and so attached to these players that they want to see them do well, and they want to see watch them grow up as they're going along, which is something I really enjoy as far as spring training goes. You can watch, you know, pitchers fielding practice for hours and it gets kind of boring, but to watch the kids. There was a time last spring where Dwayne Underwood was put up against Jake Arrieta during a minor league game way in the back fields in Mesa. And just, I mean, Dwayne Underwood really took that outing seriously because he knew that all of the brass from the front office was there to watch. Of course, they're watching Arrieta, but they have Underwood there who's finally getting a chance to have Maddon watch him and have some of the other people watch him a little more closely. And he, talking to him after that, he looked at it almost as a game. I mean, that was something that meant a lot to him. So it's just seeing things like that and watching how these guys progress, watching how they interact with the big leaguers. It's to me, that part is nice. Plus the weather's so darn nice here in Arizona. You know, it's just, I've always tell my husband, as soon as I see the first flakes of snow that I'm ready to go. So I think a lot of it has to do with that.
Yeah, I agree. I hear that answer a lot, especially from teams, you know, the reporters we talk to in your division of the NL Central, that the winters are long and brutal, and when spring rolls around and you have a chance to get down to Florida or Arizona, whatever the case may be, you're on that first flight and nobody can blame you there. Kerry Muscat, great stuff as always. Enjoy your time. We'll do it again next week for sure. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Chicago Cubs.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.